Let's continue tonight as we go to Exodus chapter 29, if you would turn in your Bibles there. Exodus chapter 29, we're looking at the priests' animal sacrifices. This always necessitates more extensive review because there's so much to remember, so much to try to grasp as we look at these sacrifices. And so I constantly go back and remind us of what we've seen already, something we've learned. And the thing that I've been trying to really instill in your minds is the theme of Exodus. And you see it right up there on the screen. If you would say it out loud, please. The theme of Exodus is? I believe that's what the theme is. Some other commentator, somebody else may say, well, I believe the theme is such and such, and they may be true. But I believe one of the prominent themes in this book is that God says, I want you to know me. Whether you're saved or not, I want you to know me. Even as a believer, I want you to know me. Paul himself said that I might know him, the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death. Oh, I want to know him. We got to know him through the study of his names on the Wednesday nights. You get to know him when you open the scriptures, that I might know him. So the theme of Exodus is that they might know me. So we've been looking at the custodians of the tabernacle. We're not going to go into all of that a review there, but we're looking at chapter 29 where we're looking at the consecration of the priests. Aaron and his sons, according to 29:1, need to be hallowed. Let's read verse 1. This is the thing that thou shalt do unto them to hallow them. God speaking to Moses. They need to be hallowed. They need to be set apart to minister to the Lord in the priest's office. And the word hallowed means to make distinct from the common or the profane. Then you get down to verse 9 and we see another word that's translated consecrate. Verse 9, thou shalt gird them with girdles, Aaron and his sons, and put the bonnets on them, and the priest's office shall be theirs for a perpetual statute, and thou shalt consecrate Aaron and his sons. So now, in the verses that follow, is the ceremony by which they are consecrated so that they might be holy, set apart, distinct from the common or profane to serve God in their office. Now, the Bible calls every believer a priest. Do you believe in the priesthood of the believer? If you're a good Baptist, you do, because that's the P in Baptist when you look at the acronym. I believe in the priesthood of the believer. I am to be set apart. I am to be distinct from the common or the profane. That determines how we dress. That determines how we speak. That determines everything in our lives. I need to be different than this world. So I think you can learn a lot from that. The word consecrate has the idea of filling one's hand with sacrifices. It sets apart a priest in order that he might bring something in his hand to God. So you see in verse 9, thou shalt consecrate Aaron and his sons, and then it immediately goes into sacrifices. And it is this ceremony with these three different animals where consecration takes place. And it's not until you get to verse 21 that Aaron and his sons are hallowed in order to offer the ram of consecration. So as we look at the ceremony of consecration, we looked at the first animal, the sin offering. And the first animal was a bullock. Does anybody remember what a bullock is? Hint, it's the first four letters. It's a bull. It is a bull. It is a young bull. That's what we see in verse 1, and you see it again in verse 10. And thou shalt cause a bullock to be brought before the tabernacle of the congregation. Then it goes on to say, and Aaron and his sons shall put their hands upon the head of the bullock. And that's what we see illustrated up here. They shall put their hands upon the bullock. By the door of the tabernacle, it says in verse 11, they are to kill this bull. Remember, the hands upon the head identifies them with the victim. We talked about this somewhat extensively a while back. Imagine this innocent animal. Now, a bull, it's not so bad. You know, we think of bullfighting and so forth. But remember, the bulls of Palestine are not like the bulls we have in America. It's not a rodeo bull. Okay, this is not a bull where, okay, let's go put our hands on him. You know, no, it was a very gentle animal. Imagine taking their hands, putting them upon the head of this animal. And then what takes place? They slay the animal. Why? Putting the hands upon the head identifies them with the victim. An innocent animal is going to die. Why? Because of my sin. Now that's an animal. It's still hard, is it not, to kill even an animal? Now, you can get somewhat callous to that if you work in a slaughtering plant. And when you're shooting something from 200 yards, better at 500. If you can hit it at 500, you're doing well. But when you're out in the cold and you're hunting and you shoot it, it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. Because I like eating elk. But I know some people have a real problem killing any animal. And I am not for killing for the sake of killing. I remember the first time I shot a sparrow. I was on the farm. We had moved to the farm. And I sold seeds for a seed company. And I earned myself a BB gun. And Brandon's here tonight. His dad was with me. We were just little boys. And I said, hey, Mike, let's go down to the creek. I want to test out my new, you know it's coming, right? And I said, I want to test out my new BB gun. So we're shooting at frogs down at the creek. And all of a sudden, I don't know how. I wonder if this thing hurts. Hey, Mike, walk down a little ways. And so he walked down a little ways. And he had a tight pair of jeans on. I shot him right in the rear. And he screamed, man, that hurt. I just wanted to see if it did. But I didn't let him do the same to me. But, so I'm out with that BB gun one day. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go shoot some birds. And I didn't know if I could hit something, but I hit a sparrow. And when I went up to that bird, I tell you what, it hurt. I still remember the feeling. Why did I do this? Why did I kill this? That bird didn't deserve, then you just, just goes over and over in your mind. Well, think about it. Here's this bull. And you kill it. And on top of that, we're going to see here that once this bull has been slain, hands on the head of the sacrifice, we looked at the fact that it communicates the sacrifice is necessary to atone for sin. It symbolically transfers my own sins to the victim. It's an acknowledgement that I deserve to die, but this thing is sacrificing. It's dying in my place. That was all symbolized in that. In this way, the priests acknowledge their own sinfulness and need of blood cleansing. And then the blood was taken to the altar, and the blood was applied with the finger to the horns of the altar. And then the remaining blood was taken, and it was poured out at the bottom. You read this in verses 12, that the blood is on the horns of the altar. The rest is poured out at the bottom of the altar. And then it says in verse 13, take all the fat that covereth the inwards, the caul that is above the liver, the two kidneys, the fat that is upon them, and burn them upon the altar. And so all of this is burnt on the altar. And remember we talked about what kind of a smell that would be with the fat? It would be a very pleasing type smell. But then you read about how that, yes, the internal organs are burned by fire, a fire. And the word burned there is a fire that causes to rise up in smoke. It implies the making of fume by incense. It's a pleasant smell. But then the rest of the animal is taken outside the camp. And outside the camp, the word for burning there, and this is in verse 14, the word for burning there is entirely different from that in the previous verse. And this implies the consumption by a strong fire and excludes the idea of that grateful incense-like odor which was conveyed by the sacrifice of the fat. All of a sudden, this is a very repulsive smell. Because what are they burning outside the camp? Verse 14, the flesh of the bullock, his skin, and his dung. And it's a very offensive odor that is burned. But the entire animal is consumed. None of it is eaten. Now, the fact that you put your hands upon this animal and you do this, you would say, what a waste. Nothing good even came out of this. But it shows the heinousness of sin. The strong language implied that burning, that it must be treated with abhorrence and consumed by the fire as if it were sin itself. The expression throws a decided light upon the emphatic language of the apostle. And what is the language of the apostle in 2 Corinthians 5:21? For he hath made him to be sin for us, who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. Think about that. God made Jesus Christ to be that repulsive and that offering that is so repulsive, the smell and the whole idea. And the picture given here in this little drawing isn't even strong enough of people covering their mouths and running from this. It was just horrible. And that's how we need to look at our sin. But sometimes we get so callous to our sin and we're so used to it that we don't look at sin as God does. That's why we read this in Hebrews 13. For the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Wherefore, and then he makes the analogy, he makes the comparison. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, he suffered without the gate. What does that mean for us? Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, or outside the camp, bearing his reproach. What's that reproach? It's that offensiveness. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. We are not of this world. Here we have no continuing city. Jesus Christ is otherworldly. Therefore, the Christian leaves the camp. He leaves the world and goes to live with Christ. We don't leave this world physically, but I am not of this world. And Jesus made that clear in John chapter 17. That's the sin offering. That's the bullock. And then we get to the second animal, and this is the burnt offering. The burnt offering. This is now a ram, and it's called a sweet savor in verse 18. Let's read verses 15 to 18. Thou shalt also take one ram, and Aaron and his son shall put their hands upon the head of the ram, and thou shalt slay the ram, and thou shalt take his blood and sprinkle it round about upon the altar. And thou shalt cut the ram in pieces, and wash the inwards of him and his legs, and put them unto his pieces and unto his head. And thou shalt burn the whole ram upon the altar. It is a burnt offering unto the Lord. It is a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto the Lord. So you've got two rams. The two rams are mentioned earlier in this chapter. What was it? In verse 1, one bullock and two rams without blemish. And so now we're at that first ram, verses 15 to 18. There will be a second ram in verse 19, but we're focusing here upon this first ram, which is the burnt offering. And it says, take that ram, Aaron and his son shall put their hands upon the head of the ram. Here we go again. They're identifying themselves with this victim. Now that looks more like a goat. But imagine a little lamb, an innocent little lamb, and again, putting the hands upon the head, and then slaying that ram. Moses kills the ram. Thou shalt slay the ram, it says in verse 16. And then it says, God says to Moses, you shall take his blood and sprinkle it round about upon the altar. And then in verse 17, the inwards are to be cut apart and arranged in order. And then in verse 18, all of it is to be burned upon the altar. Here's that word burn again. And the word burn here is that word, not the first word that talks about this sweet smell, but it's that second word, that total consuming by fire to cause to rise up in smoke, and it is a burning. Actually, I got that wrong, because look at what it says in verse 18. If I would have just read my notes, no, this is not that. This is not the word where it's total consumption. It is the word that typifies to cause to rise up in smoke and implies the making of fume by incense. It is the first burn. This is not the word burn where the bull is burned outside the camp. It is a burnt offering. It is a sacrifice that is wholly burned. Why is it all burned upon the altar? Because it is a sin offering. No part of it is consumed, that is eaten by the priests. Everything again is consumed by fire. And it says in verse 18, it is a sweet savor. In other words, it's a soothing, a quieting, a tranquilizing smell. The action of placing the hands upon the head of this victim typifies the believer's assurance of his acceptance in the beloved. That's what Arthur W. Pink said. Ephesians 5:2, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for what? A sweet smelling savor, a sweet smelling fragrance. Now, before we get to the third animal, the order in which this is taking place is important, and this is how I'm actually going to close tonight. The first animal is what now? It's a bull. It's a bullock. And that is for the sin offering. Nothing but the fat is offered to God. The rest is consumed by fire. Bush says this, The offerers were not yet worthy of God's acceptance of a gift from them. In other words, you have an unsaved person. And the unsaved person says, you know what, I want to give an offering to God. I'm going to come to God and I'm going to give him an offering. How does God view that? The sacrifices of the wicked are? Does anybody know how that goes? It's an abomination to God. It's an abomination. Think about it. Somebody who does not know Jesus Christ can come and they can put in the offering plate all of their money. How does God view that? It's an abomination. Something has to take place before I can bring something to God that he will accept. And he will say, that is a sweet smelling savor to me. What has to take place in the life of an individual before God can say, yes, I will accept that? That's what I want you to be thinking about this week. Because an unsaved individual can't just bring something to God and God's going to say, wow, that was really a wonderful sacrifice. What a wonderful offering you've given me. That person gave his life. He sacrificed something. But before I am able to bring something in my hands to God that he will accept and say, I will accept that, something has to take place. That's the statement that Bush is making here in reference to this first animal. The offerers were not yet worthy of God's acceptance of a gift from them. In other words, they can't jump from this bull and go to the second ram. Because the second ram is where they actually take in their hands. Do you remember the wave offering? That's what you're going to see. Where they take in their hands part of this ram and they wave it before the Lord. And then they eat part of it and some of it they burn to God in fire. They cannot do that until this second ram is sacrificed and the bull has been sacrificed. Folks, there's a lesson in here for us. And it's something that I want you to be thinking about this week. So they take that second animal, the burnt offering, before you get to the ram of consecration. Remember, consecrate has to do with something in my hands. They are not yet able to bring anything in their hands to God. There are some here tonight, perhaps you cannot come to God with anything in your hand. You can't. Whatever you do, it's an abomination to him. Until you get something taken care of. And that is when your sin problem is taken care of. Through Jesus Christ. Okay, the second animal, we just read verses 15 to 18. This entire ram is offered to God. And a term, I was reading George Bush's commentary. Now, for those of you who haven't been here, it's not George Bush, the president. It's George Bush who wrote a commentary back in the 1800s. I didn't even know about a George Bush back then, except for this guy. So he wrote this commentary way back then. And in his writing, he's quoting a Jewish rabbi. And this Jewish rabbi is talking about this second ram, and he calls this second ram a Holocaust. Now that'll arrest your attention. I'm thinking, wait, this is in the 1800s. There was no Holocaust even known back then. Because when you think of the Holocaust, what are you thinking of? You're thinking Nazi Germany, you're thinking Jews being rounded up, and you're thinking about this Holocaust. Well, the word Holocaust existed, as I have studied into this, long before that. But the term is used, Holocaust, and the primary definition of Holocaust, when you go to your dictionary, you know how you got the primary meaning, the secondary meaning, the tertiary meaning? The primary meaning is this: great or total destruction, especially by fire. Great or total destruction. What happens to this ram? Totally consumed by fire. And then I went into the word history of that word Holocaust. Great or total destruction, especially by fire. And then they give this word history, because I'm sure they're very concerned about offending somebody when they use the word Holocaust and how they define it. Totality of destruction has been central to the meaning of Holocaust since it first appeared in Middle English in the 14th century and referred to the biblical sacrifice in which a male animal was wholly burnt on the altar in worship of God. Holocaust comes from the Greek holokauston, that which is completely burnt, which was a translation of Hebrew gala, where we get hala, holocaust, literally that which goes up, that is, in smoke. And that article goes on giving the evolving of the word Holocaust, especially how it began to be used in the 20th century with the Nazis exterminating the Jews. And that we call the Holocaust. Why? Because it was a total destruction, people thought. A total destruction, an annihilation, an extermination of a people. But that word was used long before. The Greek word, holokautoma, is used three times in the New Testament. It's used in Mark chapter 12 and verse 33. Let's just go there very quickly. It's also used in Hebrews chapter 10, but we're not going to read those two occurrences. Mark chapter 12. Let's read verse 28 and following. And one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, they asked Jesus, which is the first commandment of all? And Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. I'm now in Mark 12, 30. Verse 30, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment, and the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. And the scribe said unto him, well, master, thou hast said the truth, for there is one God and there is none other but he. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding, with all the soul and with all strength, and to love his neighbor as himself is more than all holocaust, whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. So here's a reference in the New Testament to the whole burnt offerings, where the animal would be taken and a holocaust would take place. The animal would be totally consumed. If you look up the word burnt offering in your Strong's Concordance, and you go to the Old Testament, it'll say hala. Quote, usually a holocaust. When is God willing to accept a gift from you and me? When is he willing? When is God willing to accept your body as a living sacrifice? When is that? I want you to be thinking about that this week.